You're listening to Radio Influence.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Frank's doppelganger, Val.
And Beans. Today is Friday, and Frank, we're recording extra early today because you're doing something fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm going on a little bit of a vacation. It's actually far enough away from Westchester to be considered a vacation.
You have to get in the car, and you have to drive away into the sunset.
Exactly. Exactly. But for everybody out there wondering, this is not my morning voice. This is a despicable night in Yankee Stadium voice last night. That's all.
Before we started recording, we were talking about how the Yankees lost miserably.
Yeah, and I can take losses. Yeah. I can totally take losses, but this loss requires people being fired.
It was that bad.
Yes. They beclowned themselves.
Listen, as a Met fan, I know that feeling very well. It's just, you just slam your face palm, right?
Yep.
And so you're going to join us for as long as you can before you leave, and then you're going to abandon me.
Absolutely, I will. But yeah. I'll be here on Monday.
Yeah. And then I think we're good for a while, right?
Oh, yeah. We're good at least until the holidays.
Yeah.
And even then, I don't even think we take holidays off because now even, I don't do any traveling for the holidays.
No, neither do I. Neither do I. But, you know, well, anyway. So
where are we starting?
Where do you want to start today?
I want to ask you because last night at the game and then, of course, all along the way, everything is half-mast, obviously, death of a congressman. But the sudden departure, you let me know it wasn't very out of left field. Elijah Cummings had been sick in some way. It was so sudden for me.
Yeah.
It feels so weird.
It was sudden for me, too, until I did some research looking back and saw that he'd been sick for a while and he was in the hospital. But he signed a subpoena just a few weeks ago.
Right.
Supposedly.
On the 3rd or the 9th or something like that?
Yeah. And I'm like, I think it was Nick that pointed it out. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, it doesn't look like his signature, but I'm not one of those people that, I mean, he would have signed it if he could anyway. You think he wouldn't have signed it?
Right. They could have brought that to him bedside if they wanted to. But, you know, I don't know if you saw the tweet that was being passed around. It was very odd. A woman named Nicole Maffeo or something like that, Rufeo, I forget. Either way, she had made a comment on Twitter from back early in October, when I think the subpoena or something like that with Elijah Cummings and Elliot Engels and Adam Schiff's signatures were on there.
Yeah.
And she had made some kind of comment back earlier in the month, like, I used to intern for Elijah Cummings. I can still forge his name perfectly. And obviously, it's a tweet. That could just be like he was, you know, that could mean anything. But It made quite a few people pass it around saying, well, what does this mean?
Nobody thought it at the time, but obviously they had someone forge his name. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Especially with all the rumors of people like Ruth Bader Ginsburg having staff and clerks really helping with a lot of vote casting and whatever the hell else, opinions being passed along in her stead. So who knows?
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I really don't.
What are impacts of this, though? Have you considered anything I haven't thought about?
With him passing?
Yeah. Is there any greater implications aside from, a vacancy? We have to go through the funeral stuff here. We have to go through the shunning of the president for all of the earthly back and forth they had exposing Baltimore.
Yeah, well, you know, apparently that makes him even worse now, President Trump, because he criticized him when he was alive. And like, I don't understand this new trend. As a matter of fact, I tweeted about it yesterday to much fanfare. I was actually stunned at the reaction I got, because I'm reading through and President Trump put out a nice tweet about, you know, Cummings, and, you know, it was just respectful. I was fine with it. I'm like, you know what? Okay, fine. But Trey Gowdy, man, did you see what Trey Gowdy wrote?
No.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so Trey Gowdy says this. I'm going to read it. It's a very nice eulogy. It says, Elijah Cummings was one of the most powerful, beautiful, and compelling voices in American politics. The power and the beauty came from his authenticity, his conviction, the sincerity with which he held his beliefs. We rarely agreed on political matters. We never had a cross word outside of a committee room. He had a unique ability to separate the personal from the work. The story of Elijah's life would benefit everyone, regardless of political ideation. The obstacles, barriers, and roadblocks he overcame, the external and sometimes internal doubt that whispered in the ear of a young Elijah Cummings, he beat it all. He beat the odds. He beat the low expectations of that former school employee who told Elijah to abandon the dream of being a lawyer, that he would never become a lawyer, to settle for a job with his hands and not his mind. Elijah loved telling that story because that school employee wound up being his first client as a lawyer. We live in an age where we see people on television a couple times and we think we know them and what they're about. It is true, Elijah was a proud progressive with a booming, melodious voice who found himself in the middle of most major political stories over the past decade. It is inescapable that be part of his legacy. But his legacy also includes the path he took to become one of the most powerful political figures of his time. It is a path filled with pain, prejudice, obstacles, and doubt that he refused to let stop him. His legacy is perseverance. His legacy is fighting through the pain. His legacy is making sure there were fewer obstacles for the next Elijah Cummings. His legacy to me, above all else, was his faith. A faith in God that is being rewarded today with no more fights, no more battles, and no more pain. I said, I'm getting tired of this. Like, all of a sudden now when a person dies, it erases all of the horrible things they did when they were alive. From my research, Elijah Cummings was a pretty corrupt politician. That doesn't mean I wanted him to die, but this is a little ridiculous.
You know, Tracy, I'll put it to you this way. Another aspect of this is too, John Lewis and Elijah Cummings, people like that in Congress, where they have this prefix, no matter what the issue is, the prefix is civil rights hero, John Lewis.
Yeah.
Civil rights hero, Elijah Cummings. And I said, you know what? Perhaps they found themselves doing that work, being in that right place at the right time in history and affixing themselves to that kind of a title or whatever, that legacy. But you know what? Like we were talking about in the car ride down to the stadium last night and all of our family members voting history and traditions and, you know, still voting Democrat for one reason or another all these years later, even though the reason why they started voting Democrat in the past was because of people like JFK. What you were years and years ago has absolutely nothing to do with what has changed in just the last 10.
Yeah.
And the thing, the movements and the schemes that people like that Cummings attached himself to in just the last 6 years alone. I mean, come on.
No,
you know, I hate this. I hate this rush to the grave nonsense where everybody can treat each other ridiculous with no regard for self responsibility or accountability in life. And then the first one to die becomes the untouchable noble. Yeah. And everybody else that survives is the brute who had the short sightedness of ever getting into a fight with somebody who in the future will be dead.
First of all, it's okay to say, you know what, rest in peace. I wasn't happy the guy died. It's horrible. You know, you don't want people to die. It's sad.
Yeah, I was jarred. Yeah.
I don't like Elijah Cummings. I did a huge piece on him not even 3 months ago about what he did to conservatives in in with the IRS scandal. He was dirty and he wasn't a good person. I don't care, no matter what you say, what he did was dirty and not nice. And lack of integrity. It was just, it was horrible. And then, you know, passing away of some malady doesn't absolve you of what you did when you were alive. And for Trey Gowdy to go on this 10-tweet thread about how wonderful Elijah Cummings was just seemed to me to be very disingenuous, and I think more reflective of him than it is of Cummings.
Well, Trey Gowdy just got announced as counsel to the president.
I know.
So, I mean, I'm sure that he would never agree to anything other than it's just something that he wanted to say, and he means every word of it. And I do believe that he means it, but there is always this needs to be said. He's in a certain position because Trey Gowdy is a pretty smart guy. He has to know that the coming week, 2 weeks, is going to be all about how poorly the president treated Elijah Cummings in his last couple.
Yeah, he's tied to him in every article. Every article is Trump critic. Right. Like, is that really how you want your eulogy to go, Democrats? You want your articles that are written in your obituary from all these hack media outlets to be Trump critic, Elijah Cummings dead at whatever. That's horrible. I wouldn't want myself to be remembered that way. This is what these people are doing. It's everything is it's. And then, you know, everybody, it's funny because all of the left underneath Trey Gowdy's tweet are all, you know, I didn't like you before, but now I do. You know, you're very nice, and thank you for being respectful and blah, blah, blah. And all the right, like David Webb, for example, he failed his district. That was job one. Beautiful and compelling should be associated with successful policies for those he was elected to serve. The Republicans are like, what the hell are you doing, dude? You know, and I don't know. A lot of people are like, that's because, you know, they want the left to like Trey Gowdy now that he's the counsel for the president. And I'm like, Jesus, this is just ridiculous. If that's the level we're at now, where even somebody's words on Twitter eulogizing someone are a 4D chess move to shift public opinion.
Well, this is part of the reason why I say I don't see how any, you know, I don't see how anything could ever bring this society together again. The shock value and the adhesive that even something like 9/11 was.
Yeah.
It
wouldn't even
doing?
Happen now.
No way.
If like something like that happened in like a very conservative location, the left would be all over Twitter praising it.
The symptoms of it, I mean, you can just apply it and extrapolate it. If somebody dies and everybody takes, they just burrow themselves in a position, and they and I don't know. So my position is it came out of left field for me. Obviously he had health problems that I didn't know about, especially since he was so in public eye. And then when they're not in public eye, they are protected by never having any kind of coverage on anything. Same thing with Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah.
They just protect everybody. And
my mom told me in the morning, and I was like, it was really early, and she's like, oh, Elijah Cummings died. I'm like, what? I was surprised too, but you don't see him. He's a chairman. You don't see him, but you don't think about it. And then I did a lot of research because I'm like, this is weird, and I found that he was very sick. No idea. Had no idea. So, yep. And I mean, again, this tweet, I guess I said what a lot of people were thinking. It's almost got 10,000 likes and it's got 3,000 retweets. So the sentiment is echoed across conservative land, that's for sure.
Yes.
And that's that.
I didn't see it. I was all shungad yesterday.
What does that mean?
Just all over the place. I was all messed up and just trying to get myself prepared for. Now I did a midday stream and.
Oh,
and
I
then,
saw
of course,
that.
Then we were going to leave. Then we left for the stadium a little bit early and had friends coming into town. So, hey.
Well, it's cool that you got to do that, even if it wasn't a good game.
Oh, it was a fantastic experience. I kept such great company last night, and I'm never going to regret that. But like I said, everything else. So that's. Is there anything on because I know that's just the big news right now.
Oh, I got plenty.
Okay, go for it.
All right, so we had yesterday this Mulvaney press conference. Okay. The Mick Mulvaney press conference where he supposedly admitted that Donald Trump did commit a quid pro quo with Ukraine. And so let's just start with the emoluments issue, okay? So at this press conference, Mulvaney announces that Trump will have the G7 at Trump Doral, which is where I just was, for the American Priority Conference, right? And of course, Twitter erupts with the typical, you know, this is enriching his family, blah, blah, blah. I can't believe they're going to do this. Please reconsider. All the people writing letters. I'm struck by the utter disdain you have for the Constitution. I can't believe that you're considering doing this at your property. And here I am sitting here thinking to myself, maybe that's the only place he trusts to have the G7 is one of his properties. Because you guys are a bunch of sniveling little jerks.
That is a consideration, maybe safety and security. But on the other hand, they've been trying to, and you know, what the funny thing is, they have been trying to use the emoluments clause thing ever since the day after the election, only because we actually have a president who comes from the private sector again.
Yeah.
We actually have a president who has not spent decades inside the Beltway, producing nothing, no service or product,
and making tons of millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah. Everybody who's predated him in any kind of meaningful way and is continuing to vie for power has never created a product or a service anybody ever wanted. So of course, a civilian who comes in to, you know, compete for office, which is supposed to be what we were designed to do, to allow civilians to raise to the ranks in a civilian government.
Yeah.
And yeah. And go there and try to affect change and not have an established elite political class be the only pool that you can draw from. So they've been trying with this from the get-go, merely because he is actually the closest thing to a real everyday person we've ever seen.
Right.
Even though I know many of us don't relate to the billionaire lifestyle, but still, compared to this, so I don't know. But on the other hand, I don't understand why he would even give himself the headache.
It must be for a real good reason. But despite that, like, a couple points on this. Number one, just I think it was a couple days ago before all the crazy stuff broke, they obtained like some of his tax returns from 2017, and the press got them, and they reported about the organization's tax returns, not his personal tax returns. They reported about how he provided the business provided different numbers to a bank for a loan than they did to the government for tax purposes, which is something that every business does. And it's a normal thing. I talked to a tax expert yesterday on this just to make sure. And they were reporting this huge discrepancy and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, first of all, he had already divested when this happened. So I'm not sure really what you're trying to prove here. Second of all, this is a common occurrence, and they were reporting it as though, like, the words they were using were the mealy mouth words, like maybe or possibly could be, you know, just trying to insinuate some sort of wrongdoing, which there was none. And then this idiot from, I think it's the Washington Post, David Farenthold, excuse my French, but he's an idiot. All they've been saying is how he's been getting richer off the presidency, right? Right?
Oh, I've been hearing that. Yeah, he's enriching himself.
So this idiot says, how bad does Donald Trump's Doral need the business? Look what's happened there during his presidency. In 1 year, revenue fell 13.8% and net operating income fell 62%.
So wait a second.
So
in an effort to prove that the president is enriching himself, he first shows how the president is not being enriched.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Like, oh, look how much money he lost. They really need the business. But out of the other side of their mouth, they're like, he's making billions off the presidency. He's lost so much money since he's become president. It's not even funny. I don't understand these people. They're idiots. Straight up. They're idiots.
That is idiotic. That is idiotic. But then again, like I said, this is a group of operatives and fellow travelers who are willing to cut off their nose to spite their face on any and every subject. In this case, they're pretty much surrendering all past emoluments clause claims just to be able to harp on this new one. You know, because of course the claim in the past is he's enriching himself over the presidency. Well, if you're going to dig up the math and the accounting that shows that he's actually suffering a little bit, on top of the fact that he spends most of his own money in 2016, he spent most of his own money to get elected. He really is. I mean, the greatest thing he had going for him in 2016, and I said it before, you and I had talked about it a few times, is he was a very specially trained candidate like no other candidate in the history of American politics since the invention of the television. No one was trained like Donald Trump over the years to aspire to this office in the art of creating and maintaining television ratings, where everybody else had to raise and spend, like Hillary Clinton, close to a $2 billion campaign just to lose. He didn't have to spend half of that because he knew how to create organic press.
Mm-hmm. So, and he's still doing it.
He's still doing it. And outside of that, what has he done? He has rejected a $400,000 salary while people like AOC are in after a year and a half in office are trying to vote for raises. You know, it's I don't know. I don't know.
Well, at the same time as that, like, oh my gosh, the CNN tapes prove it, right? The James O'Keefe CNN tapes prove it. All of the staffers at CNN are saying the same thing. There's news going on in the world. And Zucker is so focused on just covering Trump, we're not even talking about anything else.
Yeah.
Anything else. And then we had this other happening where Nancy Pelosi is standing up, pointing her finger in Trump's face, and then they trot the two of them out in front of a camera. And Schumer is standing there saying, oh, he was so disrespectful to Nancy and blah, blah, blah. And this photo is supposed to be some big women's empowerment thing, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hashtag she persisted.
Yeah, she persisted. All right. Jan, what's her name? Brewer. Oh, God, what is wrong with me right now? Brewer. Hold on. Let me make sure I have it right. Yeah, Jan Brewer. She did the same thing to Obama back in the day, right? And she was vilified as a racist for doing it.
Oh, is this in Arizona?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I was like, oh, look at her. Look at her pointing her finger. This is disrespectful.
Disrespecting the office of the presidency. How dare she condescendingly point her finger at a black man in that way?
A half black man. The things that this half black man has had to go through that no other president has. Wait. Just wait. 8 years later. You want to talk about things no other president has had to go through? Okay. You want to talk about it? Donald Trump is about to complete his third year, and Obama's got nothing on him as far as abuse goes.
No, this is the most abused president in history.
Oh, my God. Absolutely.
So we had that happen, and I just roll my eyes at it. It was obviously a photo op. It was obviously planned. Everybody else in the meeting said this was all great. It was about, you know, national security and what we're doing overseas. And then sure enough, what happens? We get a ceasefire.
Now, how long is the ceasefire for?
I don't think there's an end date on it. It's going to start in, well, as of yesterday, I believe it was 120 hours. I guess they have to move things around. I don't know. But Erdogan said he would stop attacking. And I guess that's a bad thing, too, because Lord only knows everybody that hates Trump wants our soldiers to die and wants conflict. Can't have Trump come out on the right side of this.
I read the letter last night.
Oh, that was great.
Oh, I couldn't believe it. That was one of the greatest letters I have read.
You've already gotten a taste of what I can do to you. Don't ask for more.
Oh, my God. I love it.
He writes just like he talks to the rest of us.
Yeah.
And he means what he says. I think this president of all the presidents has taken economic warfare to the best. I mean, talk about wielding the power of an economy you've now brought back to life.
You
instead
want
me, of killing people.
It's a short letter for people who haven't listened to it. Everybody, please listen to this. This is a letter from Donald Trump to President Erdogan of Turkey. Dear Mr. President, let's work out a deal. You don't want to be responsible for slaughtering thousands of people, and I don't want to be responsible for destroying the Turkish economy, and I will. That is the greatest. Oh, talk about, you know, they always say if you don't count, like, especially if you're writing a song, a good producer will let you know and hold you to the standard of if you don't hook somebody in the first 25 seconds, the song is trash.
Mm.
Boy, oh boy, what a first 25 words. I've already given you a little sample with respect to Pastor Brunson. I have worked hard to solve some of your problems. Don't let the world down. You can make a great deal. General Maslow is willing to negotiate with you. He is willing to make concessions that they would never have made in the past. I'm confidently enclosing a copy of his letter to me just received. History will look upon you favorably if you get this done the right and humane way. It will look upon you forever as the devil if good things don't happen. Don't be a tough guy. Don't be a fool. Mm-hmm. I will call you later. Sincerely, Donald Trump.
I mean, he's probably embarrassed when he gets that and angry when he gets it, but also like, shit.
Yes. Well, this is the only thing that these types of people... This is the only thing that these types of people around the world understand. They don't understand finesse, and they don't understand the nonsense. If you don't respond to strength, I mean, geez.
And he's not. The thing is, you can write a letter like that and not have any muscle behind it, and someone will laugh at you. Or you can write a letter like that and immediately do what you threatened you'd do, and. What happens?
Like Obama's red line in Syria? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, that was mm-hmm. crossed. How many times was that red line crossed?
There's red lines everywhere. They cross over them all the time. It's ridiculous. So that was great. I loved it.
Me too.
I'm like, yes, that's what we voted for you for. Keep doing it. And this... So anyway, back to that's what the meeting was about. That Chuck and Nancy stormed out of with the rest of the Democrats sitting in there, looking at each other like, okay. And then they ran right out to the waiting cameras outside. So there's that. You have about 3 minutes.
We can go to 8:40 if you want.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. So the next thing I wanted to talk about was this, the new Ukraine stuff. Now, Mulvaney had this press conference yesterday where he was very fiery and feisty. And I'm trying to find the clip so that we can play it real quick, given that we have a few more minutes. And I was a little bit confused at first because they kind of like cornered him. And if you don't hear the whole press conference, it sounds like he's admitting to a quid pro quo with Ukraine about 2016, not about Biden. I'm going to play it and you can listen. But there was no quid pro quo because he didn't know. I mean, what's his name? Zelensky didn't know that they were withholding any aid. You know
right.
what I'm saying? So
it,
there
it
is
didn't know for a month after the call.
Right. So there is no quid pro quo, but the way he answers this makes it sound like there is. If you didn't hear the context of the rest of it, so here we go.
So the demand for an investigation into the Democrats was part of the reason that he
was
ordered to withhold funding to Ukraine.
The look back to what happened in 2016 certainly was part of the thing that he was worried about in corruption with that nation, and that is absolutely appropriate.
Withholding the funding.
Yeah, which ultimately then flowed. By the way, there was a report that we worried that the money wouldn't, if we didn't pay out the money, it would be illegal. Okay, it would be unlawful. That is one of those things that is that little shred of truth in it that makes it look a lot worse than it really is. We were concerned about in our over at OMB about an impoundment. And I know I've just put half of you folks to bed, but there's the Budget Control Act, Budget Control Impoundment Act of 1974 says that if Congress appropriates money, you have to spend it. Okay, at least that's how it's interpreted by some folks. And we knew that that money either had to go out the door by the end of September, or we had to have a really, really good reason not to do it. And that was the legality of the issue.
But to be clear, what you just described is a quid pro quo. It is funding will not flow unless the investigation into the Democratic server happened as well.
We do that all the time with foreign policy. We were holding up money at the same time for, what was it, the Northern Triangle countries. We're holding up aid at the Northern Triangle countries so that they would change their policies on immigration. By the way, and this speaks to an important point because I heard this yesterday, and I can never remember the gentleman who testified. Was McKinney the guy? Is that his name? I don't know. He testified yesterday. And if you go, and if you believe the news reports, okay, because we've not seen any transcripts of this. The only transcript I've seen was Sondland's testimony this morning. If you read the news reports and you believe them, what did McKinney say yesterday? Well, McKinney said yesterday that he was really upset with the political influence in foreign policy. That was one of the reasons he was so upset about this. And I have news for everybody. Get over it. There's going to be political influence in foreign policy. I'm talking to Mr. Carl. That is going to happen. Elections have consequences, and foreign policy is going to change from the Obama administration to the Trump administration. And what you're seeing now, I believe, is a group of mostly career bureaucrats who are saying, you know what, I don't like President Trump's politics, so I'm going to participate in this witch hunt that they're undertaking on the Hill.
The insanity that anybody would look at this stuff. And first of all, this is why foreign aid needs to be cut to everyone.
Yep.
This is why, ladies and gentlemen, it might be glaringly obvious to all of you, but this is all this money is unconstitutional. This is our money that is being floated around the world. Why? Why? There is no reason to give free money to foreign nations other than to influence and modify their behavior to our liking. Everything is a quid pro quo.
Literally.
Everything. There is the forest for the trees version on this, where we start talking about, well, do we like the reason why the Trump administration is working with our foreign aid money to tackle corruption or this and that? Do we think it's corruption? Do we think it's election meddling? Or do you want the bird's eye view?
But that's not a quid pro quo, what he just explained.
I understand, but what I'm just saying is that what gets lost in all of this semantics is that the very nature of foreign aid is pretty much a quid pro quo.
Yeah.
So it's like to hear reporters stand there and try to really get a gotcha when what are we talking about here? It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, what's funny is that Adam Schiff says Mulvaney just said that U.S. military aid for Ukraine was held up pending Ukraine's investigation of Democrats. Things just went from very, very bad to much, much worse. And I'm like, yeah, maybe for you, because you just admitted that there was a reason to investigate Democrats.
Yeah. And of course, and listen, as far as whatever Adam Schiff hears and gets really riled up about, who the hell even cares? I mean, he hears a lot of different types of things that never happen, and he says a lot of different types of things that never happen. All right, in that House Intelligence Committee hearing when he went off with his James Cagney, you dirty rat nonsense. I'll call you back. You see?
Yeah, I know.
It's stupid.
Shane, I've got you now.
I've got you now. I'll say this about seven more times, you see. I'm going to come back for you if you don't give me what I want, you see. Rat face.
I always wanted a reason to call someone a rat fink. Whatever that means.
I don't know. I don't know what the hell that is. Rat bastard is so much better.
Well, sticking with this real quick, there was another story that came out yesterday about Volcker. Now, I listened to this documentary that someone put in my thread about, they did the Spygate documentary that explains like all of the foreign connections, and it's like excerpts of like interviews that people and experts did. It's really actually quite good. And inside of there, there was a bit about the Atlantic Council and the, what is it called? There was a hack of this British think tank way long time, maybe a year ago, where documents came out about, what is it called? Man, my short-term memory shot today. It's called the, I'm looking for it, hold on. Stand by, the Integrity Initiative. I don't know if you remember this at all.
Oh, I do.
You do?
Yeah, this is pretty much like the European Operation Mockingbird.
Right. So the Integrity Initiative is tied to the Atlantic Council, which is tied to Ukraine through, what's his name? Jesus, what's wrong with me? I need more coffee.
The
Ukrainian guy, the Viktor Pinchuk, right? So Viktor Pinchuk funds the Atlantic Council that funds CrowdStrike. Dmitry Alperovich is sitting on the CrowdStrike. The director of technology for CrowdStrike is on the Atlantic Council. The Atlantic Council intermingles with the Integrity Initiative, which is basically a propaganda outlet to you know, like you said, Operation Mockingbird in the UK, but they also work with a lot of folks inside the US.
And it's not just the UK. Let me just add, it's not just the UK. The Integrity Initiative has its influence into all European politics. I mean, press goings on. I was looking into that when it first came out, and I think The Intercept or somebody shed light on it. And I was seeing how there was instances where this Integrity Initiative was actually reaching out to Italian newspapers on a number of issues.
Well, they stopped a diplomat or someone from being elected.
Yeah, to make sure that foreign newspapers all over the EU were tailoring their coverage of certain stories to fit official narratives and whatever. So you have this UK based group that is dictating to the supposedly free press in places like Italy. So it is quite literally Operation Mockingbird.
And the worst part about it is that I don't know if a lot of people know, but Sebastian Gorka's wife is in the Department of Homeland Security. And she was mentioned in their documents as a point person for them to work with in the United States.
Hmm.
Which raised alarm bells for me at the time. But anyway, I digress. So this whole Ukraine thing is steeped in this corruption with the Atlantic Council, which is a really horrible think tank that has a lot of power across the world. And so Volker, who also participates and was also a president at the McCain Foundation, is the ambassador surrounding this whole Ukraine story. So this is very deep. It's got several layers, right?
Very deep.
It is very deep. He stepped down, but now an article came out yesterday that Schiff had met with him and was trying to pressure him into saying something that wasn't true. They tried to reframe their questions. The headline here quickly is Volker testimony destroys narrative of diplomatic turmoil. But Schiff was trying to pressure him into the opposite, and he refused to bend. And then we also found out yesterday in more of the mainstream new media that one of Schiff's staffers met with another witness in Ukraine after the whistleblower had already stepped forward, or the leaker. So there's a whole bunch of shenanigans going on here, and they're still on this nonsense, holding impeachment proceedings without a vote, in secret, without letting anyone see what's going on, likening it to a grand jury proceeding, which it is not. And I think the American people are just really bored with it at this point. And Nancy,
I am
too. She won't hold a vote. She said she won't hold a vote. She won't hold a vote because if they vote yes to impeach, those people are on the record. It'll never fly by in the Senate and she fails. If they vote no to impeach, she looks like an idiot. So she loses either way. This is a loser for them. So they're just going to string it along as long as they possibly can. And that's where we're at.
Yep.
So yep. 39 minutes and 29 seconds. Up to you if you want to get packing, get the car all packed up, or if you want to hang out.
Well, I think Lauren is moving along over here. I can, you know what? 5 more minutes. 8:45.
I know it's addicting, isn't it?
This is horrible. Yes.
What's horrible?
It's a horrible addiction.
Oh, yes, I know.
No, this podcast was a great one. I feel like you have a new host, but I understand how unlike myself I sound. So it's almost like you have a different co-host today.
No, the personality is always there.
It's still there.
It's still there.
I could be Stephen Hawking over here just typing all my words out. I should do that one episode where everything you say, I should type out my response and have a robot voice say it.
Robot Frank. Robot this Frank.
This is bullshit.
This is. I have a clip and I'm looking for it that I wanted to play the other day. It's. Oh, shoot. Where is it? I can't find it. Figures. It was Lee Zeldin, who has been like a hero in all of this, calling out the press for their nonsense.
Congressman?
Yeah.
He's New Yorker, right?
Yes. And here, you know what? Again, I met him several times and he was at my business manager Gigi's house in her living room with us. We busted our asses out in Suffolk County for him. I'll take credit for his first election. Because he was, you know, we didn't agree with him on everything, but we really liked him a lot. But he basically takes the press to task for just towing the Democrat line. As a matter of fact, this is even better, but you got to give me a second to find it. Yesterday I shared this. It was the parallel between the leftist politicians and the leftist media. Do you want to listen to this real quick? It's really kind of scary.
No, that'd be great.
Presidency revealed the dishonorable fact of the president's betrayal of his oath of office.
The president has been exposed violating his oath of office.
The president of the United States has betrayed his oath of office.
Violations of his oath to the Constitution.
Unprecedented breach of the oath of office.
Betrayals of his oath of office.
The president has admitted enough. We have got enough information at this point.
He has already confirmed what he's done in broad daylight.
We've basically got a confession.
He's already confessed to this crime.
The president has already admitted.
The president admits he did it.
The White House and the State Department continue to orchestrate this massive cover-up.
We are watching a cover-up by the president of the United States.
They've been in the business of trying to cover up.
Implicated in a cover-up.
There's a cover-up.
The cover-up, the attempted cover-up.
To interfere with the Congress's ability to call before it relevant witnesses will be considered as evidence of obstruction.
Trump's strategy, it's pretty clear. Obstruct, deflect, confuse.
Obstructing justice, refusing to comply with the congressional inquiry.
It is obstruction of justice. It's bribery.
A lot of the committees have documented obstruction of justice.
All of this obstruction from the White House and from the president specifically.
He's using the abuse of power and every element of the presidency.
The heart of the abuse of power.
This gross abuse of power.
You could say it was an abuse of power.
There has been an abuse of power.
More signs of abuse of power.
A very devastating picture of
obviously impeachable abuse of power.
Who was who? Could you tell?
Yeah, I can. I can start. That's sad, right? I'm starting to know voices. It's almost like, oh, who's this? Who's this guest cameo vocals on this song? You know. So there's that. I would have to say this. Have you ever heard the song? The possible collusion song?
No.
You never heard Trump Russia possible collusion?
Oh yeah. Trump Russia possible collusion. Trump.
It's sick. It's sick. But that's another example, a little bit more of a melodic example that crosses, that you see that barrier being crossed between press and government. But then again, ladies and gentlemen, this is along the way, it's always good to be refreshed about a reality that we all know to be very, very prominent. But this was the greatest revelation in the DNC leaks, that there's no divider line on the grocery store conveyor belt between these people. They are one and the same. They feed each other. They edit each other's work. This is exactly what it was.
The left wing media released the talking points that Nancy Pelosi had provided, like it was a badge of honor. And I'm like, why do you have a congressperson's talking points?
Well, you remember in the DNC leaks, in those leaks, I think it was Glenn Thrush that called himself a hack.
A hack, right.
And he called himself a hack. It was obviously an attempt at self-deprecating humor. But, I mean, you have to know something about yourself to be self-deprecating. You're a hack.
Really sick. Really sick. I wrote an article for the first time in a long time for Uncover DC the other day. Four answers we should find in the FISA report. Uh-huh. And I go through four of them. And I had a lot of I'll go through this later, but I had a lot of people say to me, you know, it's never coming out. There's a big delay. And I just caught this thread by Margot Cleveland from The Federalist. It says, for those of you anxious about the release of the IG's report on FISA abuse, I'd posit the delay is good news to the truth coming out. Here's why Horowitz handed over the draft mid-September. And after getting the draft, Barr and Durham reportedly traveled to Italy and spoke with Italian intelligence heads. And while there, Durham took possession of the two Blackberries used by MIFSID, as we learned the other day. And then this sequence suggests one of two possibilities. The IG report uncovered evidence relating to MIFSID, but the IG lacked the power to follow that lead. Or Barr and Durham weren't satisfied with the IG, with what the IG put together regarding MIFSID. Under either scenario, we can feel confident that Barr is assuring a thorough investigation. And in her view, the longer we now wait for the IG report, the better, because the truth about MIFSID is nearly as relevant to FISA abuse as the Steele dossier, because the FISA application used Papadopoulos and MIFSID to create the mystique of collusion with Russia, but withheld significant details from the FISA court. So the longer the delay to the release of the IG report, the better it bodes for the truth. And from Barr and Durham's recent sojourn to Italy and their return with the Blackberries, we know that is the end goal. Now, I don't understand why that would delay the FISA report. They've obviously read it, so get the thing out already.
Yep. I'm with you on that one.
You know, we did 47 minutes. I say we just end.
You know what? If you and I can walk out the door together, that would make me feel even better.
I would love to walk out the door linked arms doing the dipsy doodaroo.
That's it. We're going to be doing a dipsy doodle.
Well, listen, you have a fantastic... when do you come back? Sunday?
I'll be back early Sunday afternoon.
All right. Well, listen, you have a fun weekend.
Thank you.
You know, I'll try and keep you posted if anything crazy happens.
Supposedly, there's going to be a meteor shower that peaks on the 20th, but that's why we actually booked this weekend.
Oh, wow.
Because anywhere near the Adirondacks is beautiful skies at night. So, yeah. Especially with the dryness of October, and I wanted to see what kind of celestial events were going on, and there's a meteor shower this weekend that peaks on Sunday, so I figured we should be able to see some kind of a light show on Saturday. So,
well, that's fantastic. I hope you and your beautiful wife have a good time. I'm not doing anything this weekend, which is a welcome change. So
yeah, that's good too.
Yeah. You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums.
And me, Beans. And you guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you on Monday.
Later.
This is a Jim Fannin Show Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Would you like to be free from worry? Worry. That nagging thought. That nagging little voice in the back of your mind. Worry. Anchored of what happened in the past. Projected into the future. Now causing you anxiety, fear. Would you like to be free from anxiety, fear, and negative stress? Of course. Aren't you fatigued from the negative rhetoric of our times? That's easy. Watch the news. Read the newspapers. Read the news feeds. Tens of millions of people from various backgrounds are making their personal, psychological, and spiritual journey to a better life. That's happening right now. And you may not see it as you say good morning to a neighbor as he pulls out of his driveway to go off to work, but he's already started the mental migration of hope. This phenomenon, it's happening right now. People around the world want freedom from negativity while they pursue their vision of personal prosperity. This positive quest for a new beginning, well, it requires discipline, a blueprint, that's definite. It requires focus on a regular daily basis, and of course, it needs hope. And above all, it requires courage to change.
The Jim Fannin Show can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.